You're about to listen to another Bonversation. Bonversations feature the most interesting and insightful people in the act realm and beyond. Every episode is made possible by people like you who value and support independent media. Now here's your host, JLB.
It wasn't a tent, it was this magnificent thing.
Yes, Bonversations, this is episode number 44, and today we're talking about, among other things, media fakery, good versus evil, where do we really live? What is this place? And how do we explain these incredible so-called coincidences? For example, when Tom Hanks, just a few weeks before 3/11, said,
"Sometimes it's 3 o'clock in the morning, and sometimes it's 11 at night.
How do we explain these so-called coincidences? So we've got a lot to talk about with our special guest coming to us from Portugal, Armin Rhee. Great to have you on the Bonversations.
Great to be here, John. A special greeting to all of the audience, and I hope it's an interesting conversation.
I'm absolutely certain that it will be. I was going back through the archives of Fakeologist.com recently, and I found an appearance that you made back in 2013. So you've been in this corner of the internet for longer than me, Armin Rhee.
Yeah, well, back then, I even started listening to a lot of this stuff. I lurked for a long time. And I started listening to Ab the Fakeologist, even on TalkShoe. At the time, it was called Waking Up with Ab. I'm not sure if you ever listened to any of those. But it was something that he did on TalkShoe before he even coined the term fakeologist. So, yeah, I've been around since the time that YouTube would actually recommend, let's say, conspiracy videos or something like that in the sidebar. So, yeah, I'm a sort of a... I don't think dinosaurs exist, but if they do, I'm one of them.
Yeah, you're an act realm dinosaur. You got here before I did, and it's always a treat for me to talk with somebody who's been here for as long as I have or longer, because so much has happened in this corner of the internet over the past 10 or 15 years, and we have a lot to look back on. But let's start with your YouTube channel. You do have a YouTube channel, which I'll link to in the show notes. Can you tell the listeners, what kind of stuff do you do with your channel?
Well, the channel is basically where I it started as a place to put my contributions, let's say. I've listened, like I said, I've lurked for a long time, listening to other people, to other people's ideas, presentations, and so on. And at a certain point, I felt that I felt inside of me that I had something to contribute as well, that it was something that probably I couldn't find being addressed elsewhere. And so what I started doing was whenever I had these realizations of some sort, I would write them down in trying, like as if it was explaining to myself if I didn't have the actual realization, and recorded them, and things just picked up from there. Although the channel is relatively small comparatively, I've never really had any effort done to, you know, advertise it, except my appearances in places like yours. But it is what it is. It's something that doesn't really bother me if I have a lot of views or subscribers or anything like that. I prefer quality. And the fact is that I've had some excellent commenters over the years, and I've even became friends with some of them. So it's been a very fruitful experience, but it started off as me feeling that I had something to contribute.
Well, you might be selling yourself a little bit short there, because you do get quite a few views. Typically, your videos get thousands of views. And I want to paint a picture for the listeners. Imagine that you're in a forest. There's many trees around you, and you're looking towards the sun, but it is obscured by the trees, by the canopy, but you do see some sunlight coming through. That is the picture that Armin uses for his video thumbnails. And his videos are actually monologues. They're audios. They're not generally him recording an actual video. It's a monologue that is then put to YouTube. So that's the image that you use as your thumbnail, Armin Rhee, is this image from like a forest. Did you take that image yourself, perchance?
No. It was actually one of the stock images that was included with the video software that I started using to produce those videos for YouTube. And I just, when I came across that image that was included in the software, I just knew it was the right one because it depicted exactly what I felt I wanted to contribute with. Like, there are a lot of trees. There is a forest. We're, like, immersed in a metaphorical forest. And from behind those trees, a sort of a ray of light or a few rays of light come through. And that sort of depicts what I think realizations are. You know, the mind and the world and reality is like a sort of forest. And from behind the forest, from beyond the forest, I would say, comes these glimpses, these realizations that give you this sense of knowing about something that you were contemplating on. So that's where it came from, yeah.
Well, let me read out for the listeners some of the titles of your earliest works on your YouTube channel. These are the titles of your videos. And again, these generally have literally thousands of views. The Seeker's Temptations, Dreams, Hopes, and Goals, Scripts and Purpose, Addictions, Systems Recruitment, Ego, Evil, Apocalypse, Spells and Rituals, One, Alchemy. It's fair to say, based even just on the titles alone, that you like to reflect on some of the deeper things to do with this thing that we call life. I mean,
yeah. Yeah, that's what I think was sort of missing, like you like to coin this corner of the internet. I think that things were being analyzed very well, but in a more shallow manner, in the sense of, for example, you would see 9/11 and analyze it in a way that was almost purely materialistic. In the sense of this was done probably, this fakery was done probably this way or that way, or, you know, the victims actually didn't die because of this, et cetera, et cetera. But I think that I felt the need, taking a step further, and I would even say a step further back instead of forward, so that you could zoom out a little bit and get a more of an overview of the causes, perhaps, more than the details of the actual fakeries and the things that we can actually see and perceive in reality.
If I'm understanding what you're saying right, it sounds like you're saying that with this media fakery, for example, 9/11, it's one thing to understand that maybe planes didn't go into buildings. That's one thing. But you seem to be getting at a deeper questioning of why this story was presented to us or what it might mean to us. Something like this. Am I on the right track here?
You are. And even the 9/11 story, one of the videos, and it was actually one of the titles that you mentioned, it was the system recruitment one, goes into that. Because the 9/11 story was also sold or presented in layers. So the first layer would be a purely political, materialistic thing where, yeah, planes hit the towers, and then you could even see it like planes hit the towers, but it wasn't the hijackers. It would the mainstream story is wrong, but planes actually hit the tower. So you had a lot of goings about at that time, like Israel did it, or, you know, it was an inside job, that kind of thing. Then the second layer would be, for example, that there were no planes. Okay, no planes, but actual something in that sense. So some of the imagery was still correct, but the planes were inserted. And then a different layer would be, it was all media fakery, let's say. Something, yeah, we know that the buildings disappeared in the sense of they were there one day and the next day they weren't, but none of the images are reliable. So all these layers are, each of them are a step back, you understand, a further step back towards less literalism, let's say. And I think that literalism, to make things literal, is one of the defining characteristics of society, not just nowadays, perhaps, but it's really prevalent nowadays, and that needs to be addressed, in my view.
Well, we've got an awful lot to talk about, but what I like to do with these conversations in the first part of the call, because a lot of the listeners have heard you before, there is an overlap between the listeners here and fakeologist.com and the other platforms that are out there in this corner of the internet, but some of them might not be familiar with you and your work, I mean. So let's rewind right back to the start. You said that you were listening to Wake Up with Ab, which was before my time. I didn't find Fakeologist till 2015, by which time he was calling himself Fakeologist. But I have heard of his show on Talkshoe back in the days of Chris Kendall and the Hoaxbusters call and all of this. So can you take us back to when you first started to question 9/11, or when you first found Ab the Fakeologist, all these live streams that were on Talkshoe, all of this kind of stuff? When did you first start going down the rabbit hole, as some people describe it?
Well, it would have been around 2005, I think. And I was—I still remember it vividly. I was at a birthday party. At the time, I had a band, and the guitarist was holding a birthday party. And his brother, his older brother, who was a very peculiar figure, let's say, was just, you know, standing on one of the corners alone, not speaking to anyone. And that piqued my curiosity. You know, I was like curious, why is this guy alone? And later I discovered that he really didn't relate to any of the conversations that was going on there. And so I started talking to him, and he started giving me a few hints about reality. And it ended with him giving me a CD at the time with a few documentaries. At the time, it was the stuff that was available. It was like Alex Jones and that kind of thing. I remember it had, I think it had Loose Change in there and that kind of thing. And I took the CD, I watched it, and I was like, whoa, you know, so there's something to this. And then I started exploring myself, going through channel after channel, trying to dig what might be going on and so forth. And eventually, it must have been 2012, because I think that's when Ab started his thing. I picked up on that Talkshoe show and, well, started listening, basically. I remember that at the time, there was only one caller. I don't know if he had much of an audience. And there was only one caller calling in every show. That was Marcus Allen. He was calling in every show, and I even felt sort of that he was sort of taking the show away from Ab, in a sense, because he was, when he called, he was basically taking over. And so when he started doing that must have been 2013, because that's the oldest recording, I think, where I'm presented. When he started holding these Skype calls, he called them raw calls, I decided to call in with my girlfriend at the time, and well, that's it. So it developed, and I've been on and off the Fakeologist circles, let's say, over the years. And around, I don't know if it was 18 or 19, around 2018-19, I started posting stuff myself, which were some of them even correlate to some of the things that I already tried to bring to the conversation in those past calls at Fakeologist. But I felt that, it probably needs a separate treatment. It's not really something that you can just, let's say, dump it on the callers there. So yeah, a bit of a summary there, but that's more or less how it went.
That is an excellent summary. So around 2005, you were in a band and you were at the guitarist's birthday party. By the way, what did you play in the band?
No, I used to sing, yeah.
You're a singer?
Yeah.
Do you still sing?
Well, not really. Well, in the shower. but no, I've left that part when I realized that to make it in the music business, I had to somewhat sell my soul. So I decided to leave it behind me.
I'm sorry to hear that. Well, today is Thursday, and Thursdays in the city that I live in, there's a place that has karaoke nights, and I've been thinking of going back there. It's been a little while. I like to sing. I've got no talent for it, but I love to get on stage and be a showman. I'm thinking about going back tonight even, perhaps. If I get this call edited in time, Armoon, and I get it published, I might head out for some karaoke later on tonight. So you're a singer, you were in a band, you went to this dude's birthday party, and a guy gives you a CD. Now, this is where you and I start to sound like dinosaurs. We're from the time when people would share information on burnt CDs. And so you were given a CD that had videos like Alex Jones or Loose Change. Same thing happened to me in 2007 at my first year of university. Somebody gave – basically what happened was I was in a study group, and there was this dude there, and he was also a musician, you know, as a chance would have it. And somehow Osama bin Laden came up. So at this time I'm 19 or something? And somehow Osama bin Laden comes up, and I said something that must have conveyed that I didn't doubt the story. And then this dude has laughed at me. He's like, you still believe Osama bin Laden did 9/11? And him even putting that question to me, it was hard for me to even compute what he was saying. I didn't even know there was a theory that Osama hadn't done it. That's how oblivious I was. And I was like, I didn't even know what I said to him, but it was something along the lines of, what are you talking about? Anyway, the next time I see him, he comes back to me with two or three burnt CDs, and one of them was Loose Change, and that was 2007. So for young people listening to you and me talk right now, talk about people sharing burnt CDs at parties or at university tutorials or whatever, we are talking ancient history to the average young person right now.
That's true. Yeah, I'm almost 45, so... Yeah, I really come. I even remember VHS tapes and audio tapes that I used to record from the radio and that kind of thing. That's probably before your time, even. But the term dinosaur can apply, even if dinosaurs are just, more of the fakery.
Well, it's funny you should mention dinosaurs and VHS. When I was a little kid, I had this movie called The Land Before Time, and it was one of my favorite movies. And so we had a VHS player. And so sometimes I would ask my mom if I could watch The Dinosaurs. That's what I used to call it. Because I was 5 or 6 years old. So I couldn't even say the name of the movie. I just called it The Dinosaurs. And she would sometimes say to me, no, you can't watch The Dinosaurs because you're just going to cry again. And I'd be like, no, I won't. I won't cry this time. So she would put The Dinosaurs on for me, The Land Before Time. And of course, Littlefoot's mum would die. And of course, I would burst into tears. And she'd be like, see, this is why I told you you couldn't watch it. Because I would be very emotional about this movie, The Land Before Time, you see.
Yeah.
And you know, that was produced by Steven Spielberg. So a lot of people don't realize that in the 80s comes out a cartoon for kids, ostensibly for kids, about dinosaurs, produced by Steven Spielberg. And it's a story of the kids going on this adventure. So it's an easy story to become immersed in, especially because the protagonist's mother dies at the beginning. So now he finds his friends and the four or five of them go off on this adventure for, you know, to find where all the other dinosaurs are. It's an amazing story, very emotionally driven story. Then a few years later, Steven Spielberg directs Jurassic Park. And this is where they add in the scientific element because they've got this story about how, well, if you get the DNA and then you use the DNA and replace a few little pieces, you can come up with a dinosaur.
100-million-year-old dinosaur blood.
Shh.
What? Oh, Mr. DNA, where did you come from?
From your blood. Just one drop of your blood contains billions of strands of DNA, the building blocks of life. A DNA strand, like me, is a blueprint for building a living thing. And sometimes animals that went extinct millions of years ago, like dinosaurs, left their blueprints behind for us to find. We just had to know where to look. 100 million years ago, there were mosquitoes, just like today. And just like today, they fed on the blood of animals, even dinosaurs. Sometimes, after biting a dinosaur, the mosquito would land on the branch of a tree and get stuck in the sap. After a long time, the tree sap would get hard and become fossilized, just like a dinosaur bone, preserving the mosquito inside. This fossilized tree sap, which we call amber, waited for millions of years with the mosquito inside. until Jurassic Park scientists came along. Using sophisticated techniques, they extract the preserved blood from the mosquito and, bingo, dino DNA. A full DNA strand contains 3 billion genetic codes. If we looked at screens like these once a second for 8 hours a day, it'd take 2 years to look at the entire DNA strand. It's that long.
Since it's so
old, it's full of holes. Now that's where our geneticists take over. Thinking machine supercomputers and gene sequencers break down the strand in minutes. And virtual reality displays show our geneticists the gaps in the DNA sequence. We use the complete DNA of a frog to fill in the holes and complete the code. And now we can make a baby dinosaur.
So even though they're presenting it as a fictional story, they've got this scientific component embedded within it. So what I'm trying to suggest to you, Amun, is that in the 80s, they captured a lot of people with this emotional children's story. And then a few years later, they captured people with the scientific component to their story. And then before you know it, everybody not only believes in dinosaurs, but they're fully emotionally invested in dinosaurs. I believe, and tell me if you agree or disagree, that Steven Spielberg has played a huge role in this almost ubiquitous faith that people have that dinosaurs used to roam the earth.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he did. And it also created or further developed the bifurcation, let's say, of science versus religion. Because in Christianity, you would hold the opinion that there were no dinosaurs. And then when they added the scientific model, let's say, to validate the idea of dinosaurs, they further pulled them apart. So therefore, creating two sides that were actually very close to each other. I mean, the science also has priests, also has dogmas, also has commandments and that sort of thing. So also has the faith. So it was all in the workings. And yes, Spielberg played a vital role in that, for sure.
Well, you said something interesting there. So science also has priests, dogmas, and commandments. So I wanted to ask you about this later on, but this will make a nice segue. You sound like an intelligent, articulate, educated person. Without trying to get too personal and ask you stuff you don't want to talk about, did you go on to further study after high school? Did you go to university or to college? Or what did you do to end up the way that you are, to end up fluent in English, a second language? Maybe you speak multiple languages. I don't know. How'd you end up like this?
Well, no, I didn't proceed after we call it here the 12th grade. So I don't know what's the equivalent in the US and Australia. But no, I did not proceed to university. I was there for a year, but I quickly figured out that it was a waste of time. I was always curious. So basically, I just explored for myself. In terms of the English, I did, when I was at school as a parallel thing, I did take a course in the Cambridge School for Foreigners. It's something that, I don't know, well, it won't be prevalent in Australia. I'm sure that there will be one in Bulgaria, at least, that's where they basically teach English to foreigners. And I took all the three diplomas there, the first certificate, the certificate in intermediate, and the certificate in proficiency, if something like that. So that's where the English comes from. I only speak Portuguese and English, and that's it. Regarding really the rest, it was just curiosity. Something just woke up in me and sort of built up. And for sure, that's why I remember it so vividly. For sure that when I was given that CD, I felt it was a key moment in my life and for my mind, for my soul, to further even my curiosity and to explore even more. So, yeah, answering your question.
So here's the reason why I asked that. I've got a theory, and to me it's almost self-evident. It's not really my theory. I'm sure others have noticed this as well. The longer that someone stays in the education institutions, that is, the longer they stay in study, if they go on and get degrees, whether it's 3 degrees or 40 degrees, they go and do postgraduate work, whatever, the longer they stay in the system, the less likely it is that they'll ever realize that the whole thing is shambolic and that science is, to a large degree, just like a religion. And it does have, as you say, priests, dogmas, commandments, all the rest of it. The longer someone stays in academia, is what I'm trying to say, the less chance they'll ever wake up to the hoaxes. What do you make of that?
I agree. I even presented it to some of the people that I talked to over at Discord. Well, we are on Discord, but over at different servers, not just fakeologists. And I even tried to explore a bit that angle to see if there was a correlation, if everyone else saw that correlation as well. And I do agree that it is more difficult for people with degrees and that sort of thing to be prone to accept media fakery and that sort of thing. I think that that pride plays a part in that, but it doesn't explain everything. But I do agree with your assertion there. Yeah.
And here's one of the issues that I see with this. If somebody hasn't gone on to university and they haven't practiced looking up scientific studies, analyzing those studies, and then expressing themselves, that is writing essays, for example, if they haven't done all of that, then I think they're less likely to be able to analyze and break down the fakery within academia and then share it with others. So what I'm trying to say is the people who learn those skills, they tend to use them to promote science with a capital S. The people who have those skills are going to stay within academia, or they're going to believe in academia or defend academia. Whereas the people who sort of grow out of belief in science, if they haven't gone on to further study, if they haven't spent a few years practicing, looking up studies, analyzing them, writing their own essays, etc., they're not going to have the skills to convey their ideas to a wider audience. So we've got this issue where a lot of people out there, they can see through the nonsense of science, but they've never read a scientific study in their life. And then you've got these people who have read lots of studies, but the problem is they believe in them. They don't actually critique them. They just defend science. There's very few people who know how to find a study, read a study, go to the methods section and scrutinize it, look at the results section and look at the supposed statistics and analyze it. The people with those skills who are critiquing science from the outside, I don't think there's many people. There's me. I don't know of many other people who are doing that or who can do that, Amun, if you get what I'm trying to convey here.
Yeah, yeah. And that's why I mentioned pride as well, because there is an investment for people who follow that path that may be harder to break. We all have the way that the mind functions is that, at least from my perspective, is that we all have a mask, a persona worn in front of the ego. And this persona is up to a certain degree coming from the inside out, but it's also molded from the outside in. So the education that you receive, not just formal education, but even from parents, from the social context, etc., and from media as well, plays a part in forming these masks, these personas, and they behave as entire sort of personalities. And so these personalities will behave as if, even though they are mental constructs, they will behave as if they were biological entities. So if faced, for example, a great scholar, right, someone with a lot of degrees, PhDs and masters and this and that, has built a personality, so a persona, a mask, around also those achievements. And if faced with something that might even just hint at a deconstruction of those achievements, will be treated by the mental construct as a life threat. It is a life threat for it. Because if that is accepted, if that is explored, then the persona has to dissolve. It's no longer suitable to the new context to the new discoveries. So a survival instinct kicks in the mind. And it is the persona trying to survive. It is the mask trying to hold on to its relevance. And so what often you see is people trying to fit what doesn't fit. Okay, so you get, it's like cognitive dissonance, right? You get an information that goes against what your world, current worldview is, so the worldview of that character. And for the character, because it feels threatened, for the character to remain relevant, it has to change and fit the external reality's perception to something that keeps it relevant. So if you're a scientist, and let's imagine that someone came up with a 100% proof that all science, and I'm not saying that all science is, but let's just for the sake of argument say that someone presented that all science was fake. Okay? That person, that character, would have to change its perception about all science being faked. It would have to perhaps admit that there was fakery here and there, but as a whole would have to keep it as a, with integrity so that it could remain relevant and remain in place in the mind. Otherwise, it knows it has to dissolve, and that's considered death. And we all biological entities fear death. That's a perfectly natural, normal mechanism. But the funny thing and the thing that I've observed over the years is that mental constructs, even though they are not biological, organic, they are just constructs, they still behave as if they were biological. I don't know if I was able to answer that.
Well, I think I got what you're talking about there. And you mentioned this persona wanting to survive. So if new information is presented to somebody that goes against their identity as a person. So for example, somebody does well at high school and then they go to university and they study a 3-year degree in science or something like that. This becomes a huge part of their identity. So if they later are exposed to information that might suggest that some of this so-called science might not be as accurate or as rigorous as they've been led to believe, there's a part of them that is going to instantly reject this because it goes against their identity. Is that kind of along the lines of what you're saying?
That's correct. But what I'm saying is that it's that impulse is so strong that it is nothing less than a survival instinct. It is fear of death. It is a self-preservation for that mind character. Because the issue is that the ego, if not alert, will tend to identify itself with the character being one. When it's just a mask, it's just like, you know, clothes that you wear. And if something threatens the clothes, it is treated by the ego that is behind the mask as if it was a threat to its essential self because of the identification, like you said, you know. And this can work with the positive achievements, but also it's also verifiable, for example, with victim mentality, with victim personalities, personalities that are used to and have constructed masks where they are constant victims. And if anything positive threatens the integrity of that victim mentality, they will also resist. You understand? So it's not just something that they built and identified as positive, like as an achievement, and then it's threatened by something that would deconstruct that positiveness. It also works the other way around. And that's why I say, and I've observed, that it is a survival instinct. It's nothing short of a survival instinct.
Yeah, that's an important point to make. So this idea of the identity that might be threatened, it's not just to do with achievements, as in, well, I'm a smart person and I went to university and, you know, there's a peer review process. So if the scientists were wrong, somebody would have told us, but it's not just that. It's also the people who they've decided they're a victim in the world. They've got this victim mentality. So if you try and present the idea that actually maybe the world's not such a bad place, a lot of people will attack you for suggesting that maybe things aren't as bad as this person wants to believe they are. And I've seen a lot of this in this corner of the internet Moon. So on the other side of this break, I want to come back and talk about this, not just the victim mentality issue, but what I call the ACT realm, or more broadly, the alternative conspiracy truth realm. You've been here for longer than I have, which is, it's somewhat unusual that I get to talk to someone who's been here for longer than me, but you have. So I want your opinion on this corner of the internet and the people who are here. But first, we need to take a quick break and get these words from our sponsors.
Are you still driving some car which is 10 years old and barely impresses anybody? Sure, it gets you from A to B, but don't you want to be seen as successful and stylish? Don't you want the comfort of brand new leather seats which nobody has sat in before? At Big Auto Car Yards, we offer no deposit finance, so you can get wheels which turn heads and make you feel like your unfulfilling go-nowhere job is worth driving to once again. So come on down to Big Auto and sign the next 10 years of your life away. Vote with your wallet and support Big Auto today.
Mate, the game's on this weekend. Are you coming over to watch and have a barbecue?
Nah, I'm going over to Danny's to watch, and you should come too.
What? Danny's place? His TV is no good.
Haven't you heard, mate? Danny's binned his old 40-inch HD he bought 4 years ago and got himself a brand new 65-inch OLED Ultra HD TV. It's so crisp and clear, you feel like you're out there playing the game yourself.
Oh, wow. Did he get it from Big Tech Depot?
Of course. Danny voted with his wallet and supported Big Tech, like we all should.
In that case, I'll see you at Danny's.
I like my burgers zesty fried.
And I like my chicken wraps long and wide.
Throw in some cola, ultra size.
And don't forget a pound of crispy fries.
A family meal for just $29.95.
Support Big Fast Food and you'll feel alive.
Hey, Big Fast Food, do it your way.
So you've got the good news and you have a special little one on the way. You know what you need to do now. Find out if it's a boy or a girl. At Big Radiation Clinics, we have the latest in 4D sonogram technology to let you see every nook and cranny of your bundle of joy. More often than not, you'll even get to see your baby kicking and squirming while we take a peek. It's almost as though they can feel the radiation cooking them in real time. So come on down to Big Radiation Clinics and see the baby today. Here, we see a starving African child. His village has no running water, and food is scarce. With World Vision, you can feed him for just $1 per day. Here, we see an independent researcher and content creator living in some little town in Eastern Europe. Times are tough. Now that the pandemic is over and the world has gone back to normal, nobody cares about the truth anymore. He hasn't been able to afford any H or B for months now. You can feed his hedonistic appetite for just US 70 cents per day. Don't let this truth artist starve. Nourish him. Join johnlebon.com today.
It wasn't a tent, it was this magnificent thing.
We're back here with special guest for Blombersations number 44, Armin Rai, coming to us from Portugal. And I say Armin Rai or Armin Ri. It can be pronounced different way. How do you prefer it to be pronounced, Armin? I probably should have asked you this before we started recording. Armin Ri or Armin Rai?
Armin Ri, yeah. But it's, I mean, I've been called Armin Ra, and so it's all over the place, so it doesn't really matter.
I probably should ask this question as well. Where does the name come from?
It's Gaelic, Scott Gaelic. That means warrior king.
And is it a name that you chose specifically for your online work, or is it a name that was given to you when you were younger? What was the genesis of it?
Yes, when I was younger, I used to be fascinated with Scottish military kind of culture, you know, how the Scottish fought and all that. And so when I went into gaming, I chose a Scott Gaelic name for that. And so the name eventually, you know, kept on. So that's basically, there's really no esoteric kind of thing attached to it, at least not consciously.
Have you ever traveled to Ireland yourself?
No, I've never been there. It's one of the trips that I'd like to make. The opportunity never really arose. Maybe if traveling is still a thing in the future, maybe I will do it.
I understand that you did travel east maybe a few months ago. I understand that you recently took a trip to the other side of Europe.
Yes, to Romania. I was there to meet a friend that I actually met through the YouTube channel. And he commented, we emailed, we talked, we videoed. And the opportunity arose for a good price and for him to be free as well. And I went there to meet him. I was there for 4 days or so. Yeah, 4 or 5 days.
All right. So before the break, we were talking about cognitive dissonance, mental constructs, and you mentioned the victim mentality thing. And mm-hmm. I believe, and I'm happy for you to agree or disagree. I want to get your opinions in just a moment. And all the listeners all around the world here at bombersations.com, please leave your comments in the comment section. I believe that a lot of people get involved in this alternative area of research and content creation, what have you, because they feel as though if there is an evil group of people running the world, some cabal or some ethno-religious group or some secret sect or whatever the case is, I don't think it's a conscious thing, but there's some element of, aha, that is why things are bad. In other words, they're trying to find an explanation for what they perceive to be a bad world, possibly because their life didn't turn out the way that they wanted it to, or they're dealing with some stuff. Lots of people have to deal with lots of issues. Lots of bad things happen to lots of people, don't get me wrong. But people, some people, I believe, I mean, they are mm-hmm. seeking an explanation that will ultimately have them as the victim in the situation, and there'll be an external group who are responsible for it. Again, it could be a secret sect, an ethno-religious group, a cabal of some variety, some ancient bloodline. It doesn't really matter. So long as there's an external group who are doing bad things, that is why the world is the way it is. I think that's what draws a lot of people here, what keeps a lot of people in this corner of the internet. Some people grow out of that. They progress beyond it. I like to think that I'm one of those people. But a lot of people get stuck there. I mean, that's my opinion on some of the people in this corner of the internet. What do you make of that?
Well, I think that it's one thing doesn't exclude the other, because my view, my observations on reality is that reality is metaphorically a sort of hall of mirrors. So it basically reflects in an external manner what goes on internally. And so the fact that our inside, let's say our internal universe, the fact that it is sort of projecting the external reality to a certain point does not invalidate that there aren't actually people, be them of the playable, this is a metaphor again, playable character kind or non-playable character kind, manifesting those exact scenarios for us. So it is, they are still maintained, this elite group, let's say, whatever they are still maintained by the perception that there is something unacknowledged. And it's true. It's true. There is something unacknowledged. There is a lot unacknowledged in ourselves. And that is exactly what feeds and creates the fertile ground for, whether you want to call them elites or whatever, to do what they do. And it's like, for example, if someone tries to tell you a lie, right? If you believe it, you have this internal sense that something may not be right in what was being presented. But if you believe the lie, it means that you were compatible with the lie. It means that you also told the lie to yourself, so you self-deceive to a certain point in order for that external lie to be validated and to be taken seriously, to be taken as a fact. So this compatibility is mirrored in reality so that we have the opportunity to, let's say, we could say a psychological term, to integrate what is basically haywire, the parts of us that are rejected. For example, if someone says, I would never tell a lie, that is already a lie. You know, of course we have to tell lies in society, even if it's just, hey man, how you doing? Yes, I'm okay. And that day you may not be okay, but you don't want to talk about it. So that's a lie as well, which does not necessarily mean that there's some evil intent behind that lie. But when someone says that I would never tell a lie, you are basically projecting to reality scenarios where you're going to be confronted with the necessity of not only telling a lie, but often receiving a lie. And if you receive that lie, it means that you are compatible with it. So you have to observe. And then you do that self-contemplation. And you look at yourself, and if you're honest, you look at yourself and you say, why did I believe this? And then you almost inevitably, eventually, if you're honest, come to the conclusion that I believed it because I lied to myself. You understand? And that is, although it's an in time, because the external lie came first, it was already there inside you as a potential, and therefore it manifested. You understand? So it's the same thing with these groups, whether elites, so on and so forth. I mean, we even have one of the ethnicities that is heavily discussed that I won't name. I don't know if algorithms will affect your show or not. I don't want to bring anything that might affect the algorithms. But that ethnicity has inculcated in its internal indoctrination a sense of victimhood, a sense of external and eternal prosecution or persecution. And so that builds a perception that is then verified in the external reality because it was there in potential before. You understand?
Those same people that you're talking about, if we're talking about the same people, they are raised from a young age to genuinely believe that the rest of the world wants to kill them and that their ancestors were driven out of some place thousands of years ago and had to march through the desert or something, and that they are God's chosen people, but for some reason, nobody else seems to see it that way, and that they're in constant threat of being killed, and that 80 years ago, some guy in the middle of Europe actually was on a mission to kill them all and did kill millions of. So in other words, if they're raised to believe all of that, and I believe they are raised to believe that, you can't blame them for believing it. That's what they were brainwashed with from a young age. Like, if you raised me to believe that, I would believe that. If you raised me from a young age to believe that my people were persecuted for thousands of years, I would believe it. So of course they believe it. It's not really their fault, is it?
No, but in the same sense that we were also, in a sense, forced to believe in reality as a structured, presented worldview, we also had the opportunity, and not just one, had the opportunity to take that leap, let's say, of observing it from a different standpoint. And that is what deconstructed that previous perception. So they also have opportunities for that. Certainly, it's much harder when you're in a cult-like group mentality where everyone keeps everyone else in check, but the opportunity is still there. So there is personal responsibility. You know, it's not because people were brought up this way that they do not have responsibility. They do. The opportunity will keep coming and coming and coming until, well, it's either listened to, it's either addressed, or if it continues to be ignored, it will just grow in strength. It will grow in intensity until it may even cause a reality explosion, in a sense, of course, metaphorical sense. Reality explosion in the sense that it's something that you can't escape any longer, you know. But responsibility is there.
Well, on a related note to that, something you said earlier stood out to me. I wrote this down, that it was 2005 when you were given this CD that had Loose Change, Alice Jones stuff. You also mentioned that you're almost 45. So I'm doing some maths here, and that would mean that you were in your 20s when your reality was first exposed to these ideas, or you started questioning your reality about how things really are, was 9/11 what we were told, etc. You know, there's an idea, Armin, that it gets more and more difficult for people to leave behind old ideas the older they get. And it's even explored in The Matrix. So for the listeners, I'll cut in a little clip here. This is shortly after Neo has been, unplugged from The Matrix, and now he's aboard the ship, and his apparent real reality is starting to hit home, and he's not very happy about it. So Morpheus goes to explain to him that they only do this for people who are below a certain age. Let's play a clip of that right now.
I can't go back, can I?
No. But if you could, would you really want to? I feel I owe you an apology. We have a rule. We never free a mind once it's reached a certain age. It's dangerous. The mind has trouble letting go. I've seen it before, and I'm sorry. I did what I did because I had to.
And what do you think about this idea that you were exposed to this 9/11 truth, if we can put it like that, in your 20s? Maybe you were more open-minded at that time. Same with me. I was exposed to this in my late teens, early 20s. So I was maybe, my mind was more malleable or flexible, or I was more open-minded, whatever the case might be. But as people get older, it gets more difficult. What do you think about that?
Yes, that has to do with what we were talking previously about the roots of identification that the ego will grow towards the character or the persona. So if the ego identifies as a certain character, the longer the character stays there, the more rooted will the personality be. And so it almost becomes indistinguishable, like the essential ego, let's say, identifying with that personality, and it can't let go. It's a sort of an addiction as well. So yes, I agree that it becomes harder. In my particular case, I was already going into spirituality and that sort of thing. I was already delving into Buddhism and Eastern philosophies and that sort of thing at the time. So things were, not as alien as it would be for perhaps most of the people. But I also consider that since time itself, with the example I presented previously, time itself is not necessarily a linear thing. It means that what I did previously was also a build-up for when that moment arrived, I was going to be more open to the opportunity. So, yes, I agree that the older it is for one to be exposed to that, the harder it gets due to that identification with the character. And so the death threat is increased because the identification is much greater.
So you mentioned there that you had looked at or gotten into some Buddhism or some Eastern philosophy. This is intriguing to me because the most recent guest on Bonversations, episode number 43, I was speaking with Ronnie and Jason, these guys who are called Team Yahawashi. And Jason had mentioned how he started looking into Buddhism and Eastern philosophy. And you're now the second guest who has mentioned this without me expecting it. Can you tell me, how did you start looking into this stuff? How old were you? How did you start looking into this so-called Eastern philosophy?
Well, it must have been around 2000 or something like that. I also looked into Spiritism, Allan Kardec kind of thing. And so it was basically curiosity, and these books were presented to me by other people. And I started reading them and found some interest in it and started exploring. And that, I think, prepared me in a sense. Not that I took them as absolutes or truths or anything like that, but it prepared me to see the world in a different manner, or to be able to see the world in a different manner, and then follow my own path of contemplation, let's say. And even the word contemplation is a word that is clearly, and I accept it, stemming from Buddhism. So that is more or less the way it went, if I recall correctly. Yeah.
I'm sure we'll get more into this in the second hour, but while we've still got the listeners for the public hour, which it's a much larger audience, I want to ask you about this because it's relevant to what you just said. This idea of sliding doors or predeterminism or fate or destiny, I'm always curious to know, do people think that what happened was meant to happen, was always going to happen? So, for example, you at some point in your late teens, early 20s, you mentioned this guy, Allan Kardec, Spiritism, and this Eastern philosophy. So at some point in your late teens, early 20s, you start getting into that. Then a few years later at a party, some guy gives you a CD and says, check this out. And here we are almost 20 years later having this conversation number 44 on March 14, 2024. I want to ask you, do you think you were always going to end up having these alternative ideas and doing this kind of research? Or do you think it's possible that had these things not happened, your life would have turned out very differently? We'll come back on the other side of this break and talk about all of this and so much more. But first, here is a word from some of our sponsors.
When the winter blues set in, there's only one solution you need to think about. Imagine relaxing on a banana lounge in the middle of a picturesque beach with a gentle breeze swaying in the palm trees as you enjoy your third daiquiri of the afternoon. The worries of the working week a million miles away. At Big Airline Holidays, it's our end of season sale, and we have half-price airfares to the warm and welcoming destinations you dream about. Call our customer hotline. With well-trained professionals who know how to upsell you from a budget three-day getaway to a bank-breaking week-long five-star retreat before you even realize you've gotten a credit card out of the wallet. Speaking of wallets, it's important to vote with yours, so book another trip with Big Airline today. In a time of conformity, when everybody seems to be the same, there's no better way to prove that you're an individual than by getting a tattoo, just like everybody else. Stand out from the crowd with your very own permanent reminder that you're special and your memories can't be taken away from you, other than with laser removal, which we also offer with a 20% discount for repeat customers. Come on down to Big Tattoo Parlor and get yourself marked like the individual you know you are. Vote with your wallet and support Big Tattoo today. The new season's here, and that means it's time to bet on the games. At Big Bookie, we have so many betting markets it'll make your head spin. Bet on first goal scorer, last goal scorer, which direction the wind will be blowing, what colour underwear the referee will be wearing, and so much more. Let's go to retired professional player to give us his pick of the week.
Well, it's round one, and that means there's some good odds to be found. My retired pro multi of the week is Jones first goal scorer, Brown last goal scorer, wind blowing northeasterly, and the referee to be wearing black undies. Multi it all together for odds of 3-1, 1-1, and win big this weekend.
Get the app on your phone for even better odds, and for alerts if you go even 1 week without placing a Hail Mary multi. No cold turkey for you. This app will keep you hooked, so vote with your wallet and support Big Bookie today. Adventure, fantasy, romance, action, and plenty for the kids as well. All the escapism you could possibly want streamed direct to your smart TV device. Bundle our movies and kids package for just $15.99 per month for the first 6 months, and you'll also get access to our comedy catalogue as well at no extra charge. The movies and kids bundle with comedy package included, now streaming at Big Media. Vote with your wallet and support Big Media today. It's that one special day every little girl dreams about, surrounded by friends, family, and their motley crew of plus ones. Dressed like a princess, the star of the show and the center of attention for an entire day. At Big Wedding Services, we tailor each and every celebration to your personal needs. You'll feel like the belle of the ball and have photos to cherish for the rest of your life, or as long as the marriage lasts, which is usually a few years at least. Venue hire is only 2x what you'd pay for any other event, and the flower bill should, most likely, come into less than $2,000. Nothing when you consider how important it is that you'll be the special princess for the day. Pick and choose which of your sisters and friends who make the cut to get into your bridal party. Be the boss you always wanted to be. Vote with your daddy or husband's wallet and support Big Wedding today. And for the guys, just let her spend whatever she wants. After all, what is she marrying you for in the first place?
See all of these people smiling and having fun? See their white teeth and bright eyes and trim figures? See how they're laughing and dancing and surrounded by friends of all kinds? They're reading the chocolates from the Big Sugar Favourites collection. It comes in a colourful box and there's 50 different bite-sized pieces of gooey goodness in every pack.
You'll feel happy as soon as you put the favourites box in your shopping cart. Then you can get home and dive into your favourite chocolates wrapped in wrappers of blue, red, green, orange and more. Vote with your wallet and support Big Sugar today.
So you've got the good news and you have a special little one on the way. You know what you need to do now. Find out if it's a boy or a girl. At Big Radiation Clinics, we have the latest in 4D sonogram technology to let you see every nook and cranny of your bundle of joy. More often than not, you'll even get to see your baby kicking and squirming while we take a peek. It's almost as though they can feel the radiation cooking them in real time. So come on down to Big Radiation Clinics and see the baby today.
Here, we see a starving African child. His village has no running water, and food is scarce. With World Vision, you can feed him for just $1 per day. Here, we see an independent researcher and content creator living in some little town in Eastern Europe. Times are tough. Now that the pandemic is over and the world has gone back to normal, nobody cares about the truth anymore. He hasn't been able to afford any H or B for months now. You can feed his hedonistic appetite for just US 70 cents per day. Don't let this truth artist starve. Nourish him. Join johnlebon.com today.
With regard to nobody died, nobody got hurt in these wars,
so we're back. I'm talking with Armin Rhee from Portugal. This is the last section of the first part of this conversation, number 44. And I wanted to ask him, while we've still got all of the public listeners, which could be 400, 600, 1,000 people, I don't know, but it's a much larger audience for this Podbean upload. And I wanted to get your opinion on this, Armin, while we've still got most of the audience here with us. Do you think, and I know this is a tough question to answer, and I didn't put this on the email that I sent to you earlier on, so I'm kind of putting this to you without notice, but do you think you were always meant to get into some of these more esoteric or occult ideas, some of these deeper thoughts and ruminations about what this place really is? Or do you think it's possible that in some so-called alternative timeline, alternative universe, whatever, I mean, this is just hypotheticals or abstract ideas, but I think you get what I'm trying to say. Is it possible that but for a few chance encounters, your life could have turned out very differently?
Well, I think that it was meant for me to be exposed to it. And what I did with it came from my own will. And it's like I told you before, the opportunities or a certain predetermined path will always emerge, but you can take them or not. You know, you can accept them, go with them or not. And for sure that I consider that these opportunities, these things that I was exposed to, were meant to be there, but I could have just rejected the books that was given to me. I could have just not read them. I could have just not explored. I could have decided something else. So there is a balance in this predetermined kind of worldview. There is a balance between the tendencies that will inevitably emerge and what you do with them, right? And this is not just for a more deep spiritual kind of thing, but even for mundane things, you know? You're always meant to be offered the first cigarette. Now, what do you do? Do you take it? Do you smoke it? Or you don't, right? So it's the predetermination is of the opportunity given, the scenario being placed before you, but then it's up to you, the essential you, let's say, to do as you see fit with that opportunity. And I don't know if there's really a right or wrong choice, but it has to do always with facing what is reflected back at you. So if I was given early the opportunity to read these books, to explore these philosophies and so on and so forth, it means that there was a potential inside of me in my internal universe for that to manifest. For me to be speaking with you here, for me to create the YouTube channel, for me to speak at Fakeologist or elsewhere, you know, all of this was in potential already. Now, I still had to take the step. I still had to read those books. I still had to explore. I still had to walk the trail, let's say. But what is predetermined is that you're going to be exposed to what you are compatible with at a comfortable level and also at an uncomfortable level.
So with all of those things factored in and considered, because sometimes I'm nowhere near as smart as some people seem to think I am, if you could boil it all down for me, do you think you were destined to realize one day that the TV was lying and the so-called experts might not have as much evidence for their stories about who we are and where we come from? You know, this idea of seeing through the nonsense, you know, lifting the veil, going down the rabbit hole, term it or describe it however you like. You ended up here somehow, and I ended up here somehow. And all of the listeners, well, most of the listeners anyway, they ended up here somehow questioning what we are told by the authorities, basically. Do you think that was always going to happen, or is it possible in your mind that you could have ended up a regular person, a normie, getting home at 6 or 7, watching the news, being upset that there was another school shooting? Oh, this is so sad. You know, the Americans really should ban guns, you know, all these school shootings. For example, that's just one example. Do you think you could have ended up that way, or do you think that was never possible because it's not part of your essence, if you get what I'm trying to ask you, what I'm trying to convey here?
Yeah, it was perfectly possible for that to have happened if I had chosen differently when the sort of opportunities emerged. What I was destined to get were opportunities, were like doors. Let's use a metaphor. Imagine that you're walking along a wall that has no doors, and suddenly one door appears. And then you're faced with a choice. Do I open the door and enter and explore the inside, or I just move on, right? So the door was destined to appear, but my decision on what to do with the door is mine. That comes from my free will. And yes, if I decided not to pay attention to the door, time and time again, yes, I could have perfectly ended up in a life like you described, like, let's call it a normie life, if you like. That was also a possibility, yes. But there was a predestination, there was a destiny, let's say, in the fact that the doors were going to be presented to me because I was compatible with them. But I could still have decided differently, in the same manner that something that could bring harm to others is presented for us as well. You know, it's not just opportunities for things that, you know, make us more aware. It could be opportunities for something that make us less aware, or even become more attached to a certain reality as is presented. You know, those opportunities are there as well. And it's all up to the individual, essential individual, let's say, to decide what to do with the doors that are presented. I hope this was a more clear answer to your question.
Well, I like the metaphor or the analogy that you're using there, the doors that are presented, the opportunities that are presented. I'm going to put in the show notes of this call a link to your YouTube channel. And this is, if you like, presenting an opportunity to a doorway to more of Armin Rees's thoughts. So if you want to go and find out more, he has literally dozens of videos. Most of them have thousands of views. A lot of them get very interesting comments. And there was a comment left on one of them I wanted to ask you about, but we're out of time here for this first part of the call. So in the second part of the call, I want to come back and talk about that. I want to talk about existentialism and what you think is really happening here, good versus evil, because this is one area where I'm not sure if you and I agree or disagree. So finally, we get a chance to talk about it in depth. I want to see where you're at with this, because this is fundamental to so much of what people talk about in this corner of the internet. Is there such thing as good and evil? Most people seem to assume that there is, and maybe there is. I want to hear what you have to say about that, because my thoughts are a little bit, I don't want to say more nuanced, because that sounds a bit conceited, but I think there's more to it. Some might even say that there is beyond good and evil. So we'll come back and talk about that. And then the sinks, this is what seems to have led you and I to be in discussion recently at fakeologist.com. I was on an audio chat and I was asking these people, these very lovely people, very nice, pleasant people on this Fakeologist audio chat a couple of weeks ago, which I'll link to in the show notes below if people want to go and hear it. I was asking them, how do you explain Tom Hanks, whether it's 3 o'clock in the morning or 11 o'clock at night speech?
Sometimes it's 3 o'clock in the morning and sometimes it's 11 at night.
Which was literally just a few weeks before 3:11, and Tom Hanks happened to be the first celebrity to be announced to have this coronavirus on 3:11, which was the same day that Ted Ross announced that the coronavirus can be categorized as a pandemic. And then we found out later on that Tom Hanks was indeed the canary in the corona coal mine. He was the first host to come back and host Saturday Night Live when it returned.
Hey, it's good to be here, though it is also very weird to be here hosting Saturday Night Live from home. But why me as host? Well, for one, I have been the celebrity canary in the coal mine for the coronavirus.
Tom Hanks, being the same actor who was in Larry Crown 2011, in this film, he plays a character called Lance Corona. There's a scene where he misses school, and the Rami Malek character suggests that maybe he got the flu.
Who's cutting my clap? Where's Larry Crown?
Maybe you got the flu.
Rami Malek went on to play the lead singer of Queen in Bohemian Rhapsody. The Queen passed away, in our reality, 911 days after 3:11. That's just 1% of the 3:11 and 9/11 sinks. So I was asking my interlocutors, Armin, on this Fakeologist audio chat a couple weeks ago, how do you explain all of this? And of course, the majority response was, it's all scripted. So I tried to explore with them, what the hell does that even mean? So I'm going to link to that chat available publicly right now in the show notes below for people who want to go and check them out. But you joined the call later on and shared your thoughts, and I still don't really understand them. So in the second hour of this call, I'm going to shut up and listen to you, and we're going to have a back-and-forth discussion. How the hell do we explain these so-called coincidences to do with 3:11 and 9/11? That'll be in the second part of the call, which is available at bombersations.com. But for the first part of this call, Amun, I want to give you the final thoughts. So I will link to your YouTube channel in the show notes below. I recommend people go and check it out. But if there's anything else you want to tell them before we leave them for this first part of the call, the floor is now yours for Bombersations number 44, part 1, March 14, 2024. I'm coming to you from beautiful Plovdiv, Bulgaria. This is Amun, our special guest, coming to us from Portugal. I'll be chatting with him for the second hour about Bombersations in just a moment. But for the public hour, Amun, the floor is yours. Take it away.
Well, I would just like to say that it is essential, whether one believes in one thing or believes in another, or has this worldview or a different worldview, it is essential always to balance one's research with contemplation, which means basically allowing the character, the mind identification to quiet down a bit or to be distracted with something else, and allowing the essential self to obtain some overview of what is being regarded. Because without that, and we don't necessarily need to agree on this or that, but without that, we'll just be going around in circles, as certainly it is observable in this corner of the internet, and for sure observable in the external manifestation, let's say, of reality. So I would say that's really the essential. I mean, even if you disregard everything else that we've spoken about in this hour, I would say that that is the essential point. Disregard, disagree, it's really not important to me with anything else, but at least do that quiet contemplation on anything that you've come across, you've researched, because that is, in my view, the essential part of decoding whatever this reality is.
A DNA strand, like me, is a blueprint for building a living thing. And sometimes animals that went extinct millions of years ago, like dinosaurs, left their blueprints behind for us to find. We just had to know where to look.
I feel I owe you an apology. We have a rule. We never free a mind once it's reached a certain age. It's dangerous. The mind has trouble letting go. I've seen it before, and I'm sorry. I did what I did because I had to.
Sometimes it's 3 o'clock in the morning, and sometimes it's 11 at night.
But why me as host? Well, for one, I have been the celebrity canary in the coal mine for the coronavirus.
Who's cutting my clap? Where's Larry Crown?
Maybe you got the flu.
You've been listening to Bonversations. We appreciate and thank all of the supporters who make this possible. Now have yourself a lovely day.
Here, we see a starving African child. His village has no running water, and food is scarce. With World Vision, you can feed him for just $1 per day. Here, we see an independent researcher and content creator living in some little town in Eastern Europe. Times are tough. Now that the pandemic is over and the world has gone back to normal, nobody cares about the truth anymore. He hasn't been able to afford any H or B for months now. You can feed his hedonistic appetite for just US 70 cents per day. Don't let this truth artist starve. Nourish him. Join johnlebon.com today.
Who's cutting my clap? Where's Larry Crown?
Maybe you got the flu.